I'm proud to be a Jew, but that's way too Jewish for me.
Shalom and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Ferris Cassell, National Jewish Book Award winner, author of Inseparable, The Hess Twins, The Last Living Twins. We'll also have a visit from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Please email your comments to us at 2JewishRadio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at 2JewishRadio.com. The opinions of the host and guests on 2 Jewish are their own and not those of the radio station. 2 Jewish is paid for by 2 Jewish radio programs and podcasts, Tucson, Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and 2 Jewish.
Shalom and Gemar Chatima Tova. May you be sealed in the Book of Life for a good new year of 5784. It's a new Jewish year, just 9 days old, which means we are in the last days of the Aseret Yemei Tshuva, the 10 days of repentance from Rosh Hashanah to Yom Kippur, from the Day of Judgment to the conclusion of the appellate process on the Day of Atonement. This Jewish season is always a time of exaltation. That's why they call these the High Holy Days, the Yamim Noraim, but there's also a certain sense of pressure. We are in the midst of these 10 days when we try to right the wrongs we've done in the past year, reconcile with anyone we've injured or offended. It's a challenge to heal our actions over the past 12 months, and it is perhaps a greater challenge to try to change the habits we've fallen into that lead us to do things we're not proud of. Our goal during these days of awe is to look honestly at ourselves and to ask God to forgive us those failings we've committed in the last year, and so again become whole. But as the Talmud tells us, for sins against God, Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, atones. But for sins against other human beings, the Day of Atonement does not atone, until we have made atonement to them personally. God cannot heal the breaches in our relationships. Only we can do that, by going to the people we've wronged and asking them to forgive us. So this is the most important time of the year for us morally, a crucial period of reflection, self-examination, what Israelis call cheshbon ha-nefesh, taking an accounting of our souls. On Yom Kippur, the Fast Day of Atonement, holiest day of the entire Jewish year, it begins tonight at sundown, we commit ourselves to trying to repair our world through repentance, prayer, and charity, teshuvah, tefillah, utzedakah. The melody that captures the essence of Yom Kippur best is also the only melody that people really come to temple each year just to hear, the Kol Nidrei, the renunciation of failed vows that begins this night of Yom Kippur tonight. The Kol Nidrei is the melody that for many people captures the heart of the Jewish experience in just a few minutes of music. Here's the great cantor Moshe Oysher's rendition of the beginning of the Kol Nidrei.
Oh!
That was the remarkable cantor, the late Moshe Osher's Kol Nidre for Yom Kippur, coming tonight. Kol Nidre is designed to bring us close to what is holiest within us. At this time of atonement and return, we do well to remember that holiness begins for Jews with personal actions, mitzvot, not simply words or professions of faith. The way to improve the world is by doing acts of goodness, blessing, and courage, not talking about them, not even with God. That's what we dedicate ourselves to this week, actions that matter and improve the world. Nonetheless, we need to ask God to help. And that's never more clear than in the Kol Nidre's soaring conclusion. This is cantor and opera star Jan Pierce singing the end of the Kol Nidre. My friends, we could do a whole show on the melody of Kol Nidre, its many interpretations, tell famous stories about Kol Nidre Eve, tell jokes about Kol Nidre, and so on. But the truth is, the only way to truly appreciate Kol Nidre is to hear it live, in synagogue tonight, on the eve of Yom Kippur, in a room filled with fervent prayer, soaring music, white clothing, and tallis's prayer shawls, and the power of the great Day of Atonement. It's a truly amazing experience. And it takes place just once a year tonight at a synagogue near you. You can join me in person or attend Beit Simcha's Tucson Facebook page for this very special Kol Nidre experience. And all of it comes to bring us to tshuva, repentance, help us learn how to work to heal injustice and brokenness in our lives and in our world. So join us at Beit Simcha tonight for Yom Kippur at 6 p.m. Yom Kippur morning services and youth program are on Monday beginning at 9:30 a.m. You can also come to our Facebook page. Our guest on Too Jewish this pre-Yom Kippur morning is Faris Kissel, National Jewish Book Award winner and author of Inseparable, The Hess Twins, The Last Living Twins. Meet her and find out what prompted her to write this remarkable story when she joins us in just a moment here on Too Jewish.
We are the soul of Tucson. We are your neighbors and friends. Our commitment to provide the very best relies on the finest products and services you, our community, has to offer. Together, we make Tucson thrive. When we win, you win. Casino del Sol, the soul of Tucson.
Enterprise of the Pasquayaki Tribe.
This Is Judaism offers everything you ever wanted to know about Judaism, but were afraid to ask. Who is Abraham? What is the Torah? How long have Jews been around? What do Jews believe about life after death? In three fun, inexpensive, informative sessions, This Is Judaism brings you the joy of Jewish life and learning. You'll study with Rabbi Sam Kohan and learn what Jewish values, spirituality, and community are all about. Plus, you can get a sample of delicious Jewish foods. Classes are at the Tucson JCC, the J, and are open to everyone, Jewish or not. Best of all, This Is Judaism is completely free, but the learning is invaluable. Want to know what your new Jewish relatives are all about? Want your kids to understand Jewish heritage, history, and holidays? Want to try some delicious Jewish food? Then This Is Judaism is for you. There's no charge, but you must pre-register by calling 520-276-5675. Visit BeitSimchaTucson.org or email rabbi@BeitSimchaTucson.org. This Is Judaism is taught on three consecutive Sunday afternoons in September and October at the Tucson JCC. There's a free Zoom option, but registration is required. All classes are with Rabbi Sam Kohan. Remember, there's no obligation and registration is completely free for this wonderful introduction to Jewish life. Register for This Is Judaism by calling 520-276-5675. It's the most effective introduction to Jewish learning and life ever. For your very own entry or return to Judaism, visit BeitSimchaTucson.org or call 520-276-5675.
We are delighted to welcome the two Jewish art guests this morning. Ferris Castle is a journalist and author. Her first book, The Unanswered Letter, is a fascinating Holocaust story that won the National Jewish Book Award. Her new book is called Inseparable, The Hess Twins' Holocaust Journey Through Bergen-Belsen to America. I think about the last surviving twins. Good morning and welcome to Two Jewish.
Good morning. Pleased to be here.
Well, tell us how you found this story, because your first story is a credible kind of discovery story for you and everybody reading the book. Tell us how you came into contact with the Hess twins.
Marion Hess, one of the twins, had written an article for the Los Angeles Times about her gratitude during COVID for the COVID workers. And she had likened that to a lot of people who had helped the family, her family, during the Holocaust. My publisher, Regner in History, came into awareness of that article, contacted Marion Hess, and wondered if she might like a story written about her family's Holocaust experience. She agreed. She said she thought it would be good. Regner contacted me and said, am I interested? And I was. The story of the Hess family is just amazing. Very inspiring, and people wonder why I would go back into the Holocaust a second time after spending quite a while working in my first book. And that's another story too. Why would anybody want to study the Holocaust?
Well, and I guess I would phrase the question a little differently. You know, it's now 75 years. There is a plethora of Holocaust books out. There's so much Holocaust literature, Holocaust novels, Holocaust films. Why do you find yourself so drawn to this?
I find myself drawn to it because a lot of what's written about the Holocaust focuses on things like the death camp, the extermination camp, the selection process, the horror of Auschwitz. And what I find myself drawn to in those dark times are the moments of some light in that darkness, the moments of goodness in that dark time. The Hess family is an example of courage and love that helped to see them through. They're one of the very few families that survived the Holocaust intact. So I look toward the lightness in those, the light in that dark time.
We will talk much more with Ferris Castle about her new book, Inseparable, The Hess Twins' Holocaust Journey Through Bergen-Belsen to America, when we come back in a moment here on Too Jewish. Beit Simcha, the House of Joy, a wonderful Jewish synagogue in northwest Tucson in the Catalina foothills, celebrates a great array of services, classes, and events this fall. Established by passionate, caring congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, Beit Simcha is a vibrant, vital community that strives every day to serve God with joy. A progressive congregation in northwest Tucson and the foothills, Beit Simcha is open to everyone throughout the metropolitan area, providing weekly Shabbat services, youth and adult education academy courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, and cultural Jewish programming. Join us for Shabbat services or come on Facebook Live. Go to our website, BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org. We welcome members and guests in our sanctuary in person. Call 520-276-5675. It's time to get those kids to Hebrew school. Religious school registration and religious school are running now for school-age children or grandchildren. Join us in our fabulous Hebrew school, bar and bat mitzvah programs, Torah Tikes experience, confirmation, and teen programs, all in a fun, relaxed setting with great Jewish learning. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org to sign up. Beit Simcha's services, classes, and events are open to everyone. Come in person Friday night or Saturday morning. You can email me directly, rabbi@BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org. Or join us every Friday night on Facebook page for Shabbat evening celebration services. They're at 6:30 p.m., Torah studies at 9 a.m., and Shabbat morning services are at 10 a.m., all with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, leading them. Facebook page is Beit Simcha Tucson. All of our Adult Education Academy classes are taught live and on Zoom. Access those through the website, BeitSimchaTucson.org. Wonderful Religious School is available in person and on Zoom. High Holy Days are here. You can still join us tonight for Yom Kippur and tomorrow, Sunday, September 24th, Monday, September 25th. We welcome guests. Just go to BeitSimchaTucson.org to sign up. For more information about Beit Simcha, to come to services, Yom Kippur, tonight and tomorrow, our great religious school, Torah Tikes programs, bar and bat mitzvah, confirmation, high school programs, rich array of adult education academy courses, live and on Zoom, and of course, all of our services in person and on Facebook. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org or call 520-276-5675. That's 276-5675, BeitSimchaTucson.org. Join me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, in the fastest-growing Jewish congregation in all of southern Arizona. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at 2JewishRadio18@gmail.com. That's T-O-O Jewish Radio 18 at Gmail. Visit our website at 2JewishRadio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website, TOOJewishRadio.com, streaming us from there or downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store, a very popular Jewish podcast. Top 10 in America, according to Moment Magazine, over 200,000 downloads on Podbean and on Spotify. Post a rating, review 2 Jewish wherever you listen to us. Those comments help. The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation. known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen, 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
And again, Shana Tova, a good new year.
Also to you and your family.
The Jewish communities expelled from Spain and Portugal, like a little bit of my ancestors, 500 years ago, had an opportunity over the last, I don't know, decade or so, maybe less than that, to go back to Spain and Portugal if they could prove descent and claim a form of citizenship. Those programs were widely publicized, quite popular, but they're changing now. Let's talk about this a little.
Yeah, it's a very interesting subject because both Spain and Portugal promote Jewish tourism to a great extent, but they also actively encouraged people with legitimate ancestry from those two countries to apply for not a kind of citizenship,
yeah.
Full stop.
Sorry, right.
With a normal passport, a normal everything. And that would obviously give them the right to live there if they wanted to. But it wasn't necessarily like an immigrant visa.
I mean, it also gives them EU citizenship, which is valuable for a variety of reasons.
But that's parenthetical. That's not why Spain and Portugal did this.
Okay.
It wasn't to give people entry into the EU. It was, I think, an effort to right a historic wrong, which was compounded by the fact that in modern history, like throughout the 20th century, the curricula, at least in Spain, I don't know as much about Portugal, but in Spain, there was no mention of the Inquisition or the expulsion of Jews or the fact that there was a large Jewish community, particularly in Andalusia, that was very influential and increased respect for Spain throughout the world in those days. And I learned this in the most unexpected way. I had a tennis buddy who was my exact counterpart at the Spanish embassy in Sofia, Bulgaria. And Sofia is a community of Ladino speakers, as is nearby Thessaloniki. And my buddy Hansi and his wife went to, as we all did, this little grocery store in Thessaloniki that was like a fruit and vegetable market, which was run by an elderly Jewish couple who spoke Ladino. And Hansi and his wife came back one time and said, like, we couldn't believe it. There was this couple running the store who spoke the Spanish of Cervantes. I said, don't you know why? And Hansi spent a year of high school in L.A. and is, you know, perfectly fluent in English. I said, no, I have no idea why that could be. So I told him about the, he said, our schools do not teach this.
Oh, my God.
And this was probably in the early 90s. So pretty close to modern times.
Yeah.
So I think that the Spanish and Portuguese governments we're not only trying to make atonement for past sins in the distant past in 1492, but also for recent sins of omission and leaving out this important chapter of their country's history.
That's fascinating. And then sort of reintroducing the Jewish element into Spain and Portugal?
Right. And then, as you pointed out, they've been cutting back on this. I mean, Spain has virtually eliminated it. Portugal has made it more difficult and more cumbersome. So they're like backing off from their initial good intentions. And I don't know the reason for that either. I mean, it may be that too many people responded. They weren't expecting such a flood. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, I heard from a variety of, say, English Jews who had some distant Sephardic ancestor that once Brexit was going in, they were going to also get Portuguese passports, or they'd already gotten Spanish passports or something. But I also know people from Tucson who traveled all the way to Spain to establish Spanish citizenship and get a Spanish passport.
Yep.
Interesting stuff. I'll have to try to figure out why this is stopping. Thanks so much, Tom. We'll talk next week.
I look forward to it.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. A Jewish mother in Arizona has four sons. They leave for college, and being Jewish, all become successful doctors and lawyers in New York. Years later, they're having dinner together. They discuss the Rosh Hashanah gifts they each gave their elderly mother who lives so far away. The oldest one, Milton, said, "I had a big house built for Mama." The second, Marvin, says, "I had a $100,000 theater built in that house." The third, Mendel, says, "I had my Mercedes dealer deliver her a new limousine with a chauffeur." The fourth, Melvin, says, "Listen to this. You know how Mama loves reading Torah? And you know, she can't read anymore because she can't see. I met this rabbi who told me about a parrot that can recite the whole Torah. It took 20 rabbis, 12 years to teach the parrot. I had to pledge to give $100,000 a year for 20 years to the temple, but let me tell you, it was worth it. All Mama has to do is name a parsha, a Torah portion, and the parrot will chant it." The other brothers are very impressed. After the holidays, Mama sends out thank you notes. She writes, "Milton, the house you built is so huge. I live in only one room, but I have to have the whole house cleaned. But thanks anyway." Mendel, "You gave me an expensive theater with surround sound. It could hold 50 people, but all my friends are dead. I've lost my hearing. I'm nearly blind. I'll never use it. But thank you for the gesture." Marvin, "I am too old to travel. I stay home. I have my groceries delivered. I never use the Mercedes. And the driver you hired, he's a Nazi. But the thought was good. Thanks." Dearest Melvin, "You were the only son to have the good sense to give a little thought to your gift. Thank you. The chicken was delicious." That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. Sukkot, Feast of Tabernacles or Booths, is easy to overlook. In the fast flow of fall festivals, Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur are followed just 4 days later by the harvest holiday, whose principal observances seem based in an earlier era. The agricultural celebration of bringing in the fruits, vegetables, and grains that carry us through a barren winter. In today's world, where food comes from around the globe and virtually any kind of produce is available year-round, a particular week to celebrate reaping the rewards of the natural world might seem archaic. But the move in recent years towards seeking locally sourced produce and grains produced using sustainable agricultural methods from native seeds, finding fruits, vegetables, and other natural products at farmers' markets and through growers' cooperatives, testifies to an understanding that what we produce from the ground nearby, with God's help, is the best food to eat and serve our children. There is nothing tastier than ripe, fresh vegetables and fruits harvested recently at the proper time and season. They taste better and offer many health and environmental benefits for us as well as the planet. Perhaps that's just the way God intended us to live. For our ancestors in ancient Israel, Sukkot was the most important observance of all. They called it Hechag, the holiday, as though it were the only one. Of all the festivals, this is the one most often referred to in the Bible. It must have been the one on which more people came to Jerusalem than any other to express gratitude to God. It was far easier to make such a pilgrimage on foot to the holy city when the harvest was complete than it would have been for the spring holiday of Pesach when planting and weeding had to be done, or the early summer at Shavuot when crops had to be harvested while the rest needed to be tended. Sukkot in ancient Jerusalem, well, it must have been an amazing scene. Sukkahs all over the city, songs and feasts for the full week. As we are commanded in the Torah readings for this week, build a temporary booth, a sukkah, dwell in it. Today our focus on Sukkot is on thanksgiving to God for the bounty of the harvest. This season, Zman Simchatenu, the time of our joy, is blessed with Torah readings that primarily focus on the rituals of the ancient festival, with some additional mystical passages. Here too, the Torah reminds us we exist solely through the grace of God, and we offer thanks for the natural world that God created to help provide for our needs. A good reminder this week and always. When we come back in a moment, our guest this morning, Faris Cassell, a National Jewish Book Award winner, tells us what drew her to the story of the Hess twins, why it had to be told. Find out when we come back in a moment on Too Jewish.
We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Israeli Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu is making a rather unusual trip to the U.S. Unable to secure an invitation from President Joe Biden, he met with Elon Musk in California, then flew to New York during the U.N. meetings and met with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, and away from the White House, of course, with Biden. The judicial purge Netanyahu is orchestrating in Israel certainly hasn't made him more popular with U.S. officials or with the non-Orthodox U.S. Jewish community, the vast majority of the Jews in America, and there were many protests. In Rome, a newly uncovered letter provides the strongest evidence yet that Pope Pius XII knew about the Nazi extermination of the Jews as it was happening. It's the latest in a series of recent discoveries that have transformed the debate over the Catholic Church's conduct during the Shoah, the Holocaust. The letter was sent by Reverend Lothar Koenig, a German Jesuit priest, in December 1942. It informed Pope Pius of the mass murder of thousands of Poles and Jews at Belzec, a Nazi death camp. It was discovered by Vatican archivist Giovanni Coco and first reported last week. Pope Pius's actions during the Holocaust have been the subject of debate for decades. While serving as a senior Vatican official before ascending to the papacy, Pius actually signed a treaty with Nazi Germany. Later, as Pope, he maintained public silence as Italy's Jews were rounded up and deported to death camps. For years, some prominent Vatican historians have argued the Pope was indifferent to the fate of Europe's Jews. Other scholars have argued variously that Pius was unaware of the full extent of Nazi war crimes, or that he pursued secret back channels to funnel Jews to safety. Scrutiny of Pius has intensified after Pope Francis unsealed the Vatican's archives on Pope Pius in 2019, an action, he explained, saying the Church is not afraid of its history. Earlier this month, researchers uncovered documentation listing thousands of Jews who were sheltered from the Nazis in Catholic convents and monasteries. Koenig's letter leaves little doubt that Pope Pius knew about the Holocaust. It was already well established that Pius XII had early reports of the Nazis' systematic efforts to exterminate the Jews of Europe. David Kurtzer, a Jewish Pulitzer Prize-winning historian of the Vatican during World War II, said. But Kurtzer also said the recently discovered letter was important because it adds detail to the historical record regarding what Pius knew. The fact that its existence was made public by an official Vatican archivist, Kurtzer added, is a sign that there are those in the Vatican eager to see the Vatican face this history frankly. The letter was sent to the Pope's secretary, his closest advisor. That means Pius certainly saw it, Coco said. He said that he was 99% sure Pius saw the letter. That's a lot. The letter, which describes the persecution of Catholics in Germany, includes the information about Belzec. It also points to a longer trail of papal communication about the mass murders. There are references to reports of the death camp of Auschwitz and the concentration camp Dachau, hinting at the existence of other documents sent to the Pope that haven't yet been uncovered. Many people were writing the Holy See describing what was happening, said Michele Sarfatti, a researcher for the Contemporary Jewish Documentation Center in Milan. In North Africa, Tunisia's president last week blamed the destruction wrought by the deadly tropical storm that devastated North Africa in early September on, get this, Zionist infiltration, an attack on the mind and thought. He said that's evidenced by the fact that the storm was named after the Hebrew prophet Daniel. Never mind that that's all kind of random in the naming, and the destruction that ensued was in Libya, not his country of Tunisia. The televised conspiratorial declaration was the latest and most extreme expression of hostility to Jews in Israel by President Kais Saied, who previously declared normalization with Israel by Muslim countries was high treason. He further vowed that people would never be allowed to enter his country using an Israeli passport. Saied also has made statements reminiscent of the anti-Semitic conspiracy Great Replacement theory. Speaking to the National Security Council in February, Saied claimed that there is a criminal arrangement prepared since the beginning of this century to change the demographic composition of Tunisia. There are parties that received huge sums of money after 2011 to settle irregular migrants from the sub-Saharan Africa in Tunisia. The goal of the project, he claimed, after changing the demographic structure of Tunisia, was to continue on infiltrating Europe and making it black. Oh. Last May, when a terrorist attack near a synagogue in Tunisia murdered three security officers and two Jewish cousins in Djerba, the Tunisian city, Saied refused to recognize that the violence was anti-Semitic. Instead, he accused foreign parties, insisting they were driven by hypocrisy, because they turned a deaf ear to the plight of the Palestinians who die every day. He charged them of being falsifiers of history, determined to distort it, falsify the facts, and spread untruths. Well, he would know. He's a flat-out liar and a vicious anti-Semite. He rose to power in the chaotic aftermath of the 2011 Arab Spring. Saied later won the 2019 elections, but then, less than 2 years later, he made the country a dictatorship, dispersed parliament, fired the prime minister and cabinet, froze the constitution, and announced the country would now be governed solely by presidential orders. Mass demonstrations broke out, but Saied maintained and expanded his grip on power. His assault on the judiciary has been compared to similar processes in Poland, Hungary, and Turkey. And what some say might be happening in Israel, God forbid. In February of 2022, Saied dissolved the Supreme Judicial Council, the body among whose members are prosecutors, academics, and intellectuals who had previously enjoyed independence. It was responsible for the appointment of judges and professional oversight of the courts. Saied accused the council of corruption, saying the state cannot be purified without purifying the courts and the justice system. He dismissed 57 judges for quote-unquote offenses they committed and then appointed his own temporary council of judges who aren't so temporary. Saied's decrees destroyed most of Tunisia's achievements during the Arab Spring, which until then had been viewed as a model for emulation by many Arab countries. Well, not anymore. Tunisia is totally dictatorship now, and the virulent anti-Semitism of its leader was on full display last week. And finally, the remarkable art collection of Fritz Greenbaum, an Austrian Jewish cabaret artist, operetta and popular songwriter, actor and master of ceremonies, murdered by the Nazis. That art collection is now being restored to his heirs after a 25-year fight against museums, art dealers, and the like. Authorities in New York and throughout the U.S. last week seized works by Egon Schiele and other prominent artists from the Museum of Modern Art, the Art Institute of Chicago, the Santa Barbara Museum of Art, the Carnegie Museum of Pittsburgh, the Morgan Library, the Museum at Oberlin College, and the Ronald Lauder Collection, all of which had belonged to Greenbaum. All this follows the New York Court of Appeals back in 2022 upholding a lower court decision 5-0, awarding the works back to Greenbaum's heirs. Justice Anil Singh wrote, "We reject the notion that a person who signs a power of attorney in a death camp can be said to have executed the document voluntarily. Any subsequent transfer of the artworks did not convey legal title. The wheels of justice may turn slowly, but indeed they can turn." And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews Round the World. The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation. Known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen, 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470. We welcome back to Two Jewish Art Guests this morning, Ferris Cassell. Her new book is called Inseparable, The Hess Twins' Holocaust Journey Through Bergen-Belsen to America. She's a journalist and author. Her first book, The Unanswered Letter, won Holocaust Family's Desperate Plea for Help, won the National Jewish Book Award. The Hess Twins story is a remarkable story. I remember at one point... I think it was my dad said, you know, look, we're raising an entire generation of Jews on two issues or three issues: Israel, the Holocaust, and anti-Semitism. But the Holocaust isn't really the story of the destruction. It's really, in many ways, the story of the life before the destruction and then after. Tell us about the Hess twins a little more.
The Hess family, father and mother, Carl and Ilse, and twin children. Are the Hess family. They were German Jews who, like Anne Frank's family, fled to Amsterdam, doing what they thought was escaping Nazi terror. So they crossed the border. A border is a flimsy thing. It seems like a wall of safety there protects you, but it didn't. The Hesses were in Amsterdam for 40 happy years when Nazi Germany invaded. And suddenly the Hesses lost control of their lives. They were deported several times, escaped, managed to be released from a transit camp called Westerbork.
Yeah, Westerbork, right.
Westerbork was a transit camp in the northeast part of the Netherlands.
Right.
From which almost all Jews who were sent there, which was most of the 200,000 Jews in Amsterdam, then were sent on to extermination camps, mostly Auschwitz and Sobibor. The Hesses had managed through many, many trials, many narrow escapes, not to be deported from that transit camp until 1944. So they spent a long time in that transit camp. The conditions were harsh, but not meant at all to be killing. The Hesses were sent into Bergen-Belsen, a concentration camp set up by the Germans, the only one of its kind, meant to hold maybe more prominent Jews, maybe more
wealthier,
economically successful.
Right.
Yes, wealthier, who might be used as bargaining chips in the war, to trade with the Allies for German prisoners of war. So the Hesses went to Bergen-Belsen, at first a survivable camp, the four of them, and in the beginning it was survivable. The kids were able to roam free through the camp. They invented games which would actually sound horrible to us today, but that was part of living in a concentration camp. The children were the twins, Stephen and Marion. Stefan, then, his name was. Stefan and Marion would approach the electrified barbed wire and wave to the guards, the armed guards, in their towers at the gate.
And they were like three or something when they were put
in? They were a little older than that. They were five when they went into the camp.
Five when they went into the camps, okay.
But then seven by the time they got out.
Right.
And they would come close to the electrified barbed wire fence, and they would wave and laugh and keep coming closer and closer till the guards raised their rifles and said, halt, or we will shoot. And then the children would laugh and run away. There they were on the edge of being killed, and they thought it was a game. They were children. This was possible in the early days when they were in the camp, but conditions in the camp deteriorated incredibly. So by the time the twins were a little older, a year older, there was not enough food, there was not enough water, there was no sanitation. And disease was everywhere, lice were everywhere. They were in your hair, on your arms. The twins' beams then evolved into, they loved to pop the lice, they loved that popping sound, and they would sit there and do that, taking the lice off their body. They learned to count by counting the stacks of dead bodies of the prisoners.
Oh my God.
So the conditions had become horrific. Bergen-Belsen became one of the most infamous camps by the end of the war. Carl Hess had been so starved of food, giving food where he could to his family, never having enough. He, by the end of their time in Bergen-Belsen, he weighed maybe 90 pounds. The children weighed 30. They hadn't grown since they'd been there. They hadn't grown taller. Ilse was sick with typhus towards the end of their incarceration at Bergen-Belsen. So what started as a show camp, really, turned into one of the worst death camps that there was.
So there's so much more to the book and to the survival at the end of the war, the escape. What was the most surprising thing you discovered in writing Inseparable?
One thing that moves me so deeply with his book is that you sometimes hear people not only deny the Holocaust, that's true that people do that, but people sometimes say, well, how is it that all of those Jews that have been rounded up by sometimes very few, you know, Nazi soldiers or SS, how is it that they were so passive? And I think this story, and when you get into story, individual stories of any of the Jews during the Holocaust, you'll find incredible courage, incredible resilience, and resistance in every possible way with whatever resources the Jews had. The Jews were not an army like the Germans had. The Germans had been building their military for years before World War II began in Europe. And so you have an unarmed group of people who suffered enormously, but also who struggled hard and fought with every possible means, sometimes with goodness, sometimes with cleverness, and sometimes, you know, sometimes they were just lucky. But it's an inspiring story of what people can accomplish, you know, under enormously overwhelming evil.
I want to thank Ferris Cassell for a great visit here on Two Jewish. Where can people go to find out more about you and more about the book?
People can find this book anywhere. It's on Amazon. It's in all the bookstores. And I thank you for your interest, and I hope people will find the story of his family as inspiring as I have.
Thank you again. When we come back on Two Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out.
We are the soul of Tucson. We are your neighbors and friends. Our commitment to provide the very best relies on the finest products and services you, our community, has to offer. Together, we make Tucson thrive. When we win, you win. Casino del Sol, the soul of Tucson. Enterprise of the Pasquayaki Tribe.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Two Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next week. Our guest will be Professor Jacob L. Wright, author of the important new book, Why the Bible Began, a work that anyone who cares about the Bible or Jewish history or scholarship should definitely read. Please join us in Congregation Beit Simcha every Friday night. Services in Onig Shabbat at 6:30 p.m. Saturday morning, too. 9 a.m. Torah study, 10 a.m. services, Torah reading and Kiddush, live in person and on our Facebook page. And join us tonight for Yom Kippur, Day of Atonement services for Kol Nidre at Beit Simcha, 12111 North Lachoya Road, Sunday night, September 24th, Monday, September 25th, all with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, and our Beit Simcha musicians leading them. Our playout this morning comes from Ne'ilah, the concluding service on Yom Kippur, the Sephardic piyut, the liturgical poem El Nora Alila, as performed by Chazan Ari Litvak and friends. My friends, Gemar Chatima Tova. May you be sealed in the Book of Life for a good new year, a Shana Tova. And of course, have an easy fast at Tzom Kal, and a Shavua Tov, a good week, a healthy week, and a week we pray profoundly of peace.
El Nora Alila, El Nora Alila, Hamzilanu Mechila, Beshaat Aneila, El Nora Alila, El Nora Alila, Hamzilanu Mechila, Beshaat Aneila. Seim umesaldim bechila beshat aneila el nora lila el nora lila hamsilanu mechila beshat aneila el nora lila el nora lila.
Sponsored by Two Jewish Radio Programs, Tucson, Arizona.